This is the IBJ podcast for the week of May 20th, 2024, brought to you by Taft. I'm your host, Mason King. Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. Carolyn Gentle Genety grew up in Belize, the eldest of five children whose parents operated a food cart and canteen. Like many firstborn children, she gravitated to academic achievement and leadership positions while also being asked to care for her siblings. She led youth groups, engaging kids with variety shows and basketball and poetry. She applied to a private all-girls high school and, upon being accepted, worked with her parents to negotiate the terms that would allow them to afford it. She paid for her associate's degree through work study, earned a full scholarship to cover the cost of her bachelor's degree, and paid for her master's degree through a promissory loan. So she's no stranger to the barriers that can keep young people from attending college or even knowing what options for college exist. And today, she is preparing to lead the creation of Founders College at Butler University, a two-year program designed for high school graduates who face significant barriers to higher education. Students at the college will be able to earn associate's degrees in subjects such as business management, data analytics, and healthcare, all while paying virtually nothing for the education. If they wish to continue and earn a bachelor's degree, Butler has committed to ensuring their total costs won't exceed $10,000. Gentle Genety comes to the position of inaugural dean after a distinguished career at Indiana University. After earning her PhD in social work from IU, she went on to lead the university's Bachelor of Social Work program in its Indianapolis campus, before moving into system-wide leadership roles, including developing online education programs, overseeing academic policy in programs, and improving transfer policies. But Butler has touted her built-in empathy with the future students of Founders College having faced so many hurdles to her own education and benefiting from the help of administrators who took an interest. In this week's edition of the podcast, she lays out the mission of the college, how it will attract students for its first cohorts, and the many elements required to get the classes up and running. She also expands on her youth in Belize and the chain of events that took her far beyond her initial goal of simply finishing high school. Here's our conversation. It's my pleasure to welcome to the podcast Carolyn Gentle Genety, the inaugural dean for the new Founders College at Butler University. Carolyn, thank you so much for hosting me today at Butler University.
It's an honor to just share this new excitement with everybody.
Now, in our introduction, I briefly explained the purpose of Founders College, but let's just dive right into it. Please give us the expanded version. While still cutting it with an elevator pitch.
Yes, yes. Expanded version. It's a two-year college, the first Butler has ever stood up, that enables students from underserved background to be able to get access to high-quality education. And we'll go in tangents later on, but a lot of people talk about, oh yeah, we already have two-year college. Yes, we do. But we also have a college going rate of 50 plus, right? So there needs to be other pathways, other opportunities. And this gives Butler an opportunity to offer a high-class, quality education, underserved students with good affordability, right? So we'll be providing full wraparound services. And for those not familiar with wraparound services, it means providing meals, laptop, book costs, and where possible, covering some transportation expenses, whether it's the car breaks down and they need some extra resources to do that. There's just a lot of good opportunities. We plan to take in our first cohort come fall 25. We want to launch the application this August. So those who are interested already, well, in a couple months, we'll be ready for you to submit that application.
Let me go back to that number. I think I just saw the same number in a recent study about Indiana high school graduates who end up going to college. And it's, I mean, for all of the work, all of the attention that the state has put into this already over the last 20 years or so, it's about 50%.
Yep. Just a little bit.
Right.
Over.
Which is, as one might assume, kind of low for the United States.
It's very low. Yeah. It's very low.
And that includes, I mean, people who would go to tier colleges.
Correct.
So even though we do have other colleges that provide two-year degrees or, you know, a transitional place before you might go to a larger university, there's still an incredible need in the marketplace for this.
And it's around the idea of making sure that there's effective collective intelligence. If we really want to make sure that we are leaders in the space, that the United States continue to do what it needs to do to innovate, then we need to make sure that there's a space for all persons to be at the table. And for that to happen, we need to make access more affordable, right? So it's okay to say, yeah, you can come, but if I can't afford it, it's not access. And I think that's what Butler's trying to change. But I also want to make sure that I'll be remiss if I don't acknowledge that Chris Lowry at the state has been doing a really good job to spotlight the need for us to grow, the need for us to make sure that there are more students who are choosing to go to college. So the Indiana College Corps doing a lot more in high school to get students ready, that is worthy of acknowledgement. It also means that they can't do it alone. The institutions themselves need to show up in the space and be ready to accept those students once they're ready to learn.
Can you briefly explain the partnership with the not-for-profit Come to Believe Network? What is its role in Founders College?
Come to Believe is a network that actually crafted the model that we'll be using at Butler. It has a spiritual foundation, believing that at some point, eventually, students will come to believe that they could see themselves in these spaces. Knowing the little that I know, mind you, I don't start until June 3rd, so there's some components there that I'm still learning. But what I understand is that they provide a wraparound opportunity for students as well, same underserved population. They have stood up the model maybe in at least two other, by the time Butler came on, were the third, and they have at least another, I think, in the works through that process.
So the template, as it were, for this.
The template is available, yes.
What Butler's using is what comes from Come to Believe.
Yes. And that's the wraparound services, making sure there is a dean or a person dedicated to leading that process, and the services that are offered around the affordability. Yes. But everything else, Butler gets to innovate.
So when can students begin to apply?
We're hoping August 1 of this year.
They could do that online, I assume.
Yes, they'll be online.
Mm-hmm. If you got,
and they look to the Founders College at Butler to find the application.
Is the criteria for student eligibility?
Which
student should be looking for this opportunity?
A lot of it is still being determined. We have some key factors that I know I would like to put in along with our admission staff. We're hiring for those roles now. But what we see the application showcasing is an opportunity for students who don't see themselves in the regular structure. So we're not looking for a 3.5 or a 3.0 or any of those key structures. GPA will be one factor of many. But they have to come from an underserved background, indicate at some point or the other that they want to continue their education, but they have limitations and barriers. I'm also looking into opportunities to put grit and resilience as a way of measuring that. There are several grit scales that talk about how students survive given all of what they go through. So bringing some of that in. We also hear a lot about agentic engagement. So there's their social engagement, student engagement, teacher engagement. But there's also agentic engagement that looks at the opportunity for students to showcase this type of work, but also to showcase engagement that comes from resilience. So putting some of those factors in along with the basics, making sure they finish high school, coming directly out of high school into the program, have the core 40 background experience. And if they have honors or community service, Center for Leadership Development or other opportunities like that that exist, you see students who want to do well find other places to show their service and their engagement. And we want to capture that as well.
Would there be any sort of income maximum for a family? Like if you make more than $100,000, don't worry about it.
No, we are not limiting, at least not at this point, there's not an income barrier. It's more about an underserved population that needs help.
And what
Let me be clear. However, we are anticipating the students will leverage Pell Grants, Frank-O-Bannon scholarships, and those have income criteria.
What about ethnic requirements or eligibility?
Ethnic requirements will be considered. That's, again, based on who shows up. There's a gap that Butler wants to fill, and we want to make sure that that gap is filled with those who show up in the Founders College.
Am I correct in assuming that you would try to connect with students who come from households where they might be the first person who would be attending college.
Yes and yes.
I'm going to use an example from an acquaintance of mine who teaches high school, who is talking about a student that she has been helping with the college application process. Mm-hmm. And her parents aren't from America. I don't know if there's any other way to say that.
Yes.
But, and they're not English speakers. And so they don't have any kind of institutional knowledge about applying to a college in America. They don't have the language skills to navigate, from my memory, applying to colleges was a really obscure process. Yeah. I mean, it's difficult for everybody. And then on top of that, you know, the problems that we had with the FAFSA this year, which nobody understands.
Although the goal was to make it simpler.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So it occurred to me that, I mean, that would be maybe the perfect kind of person that you would be looking for. Someone who was a very good student, but is really, you know, a trailblazer in her own family.
Indeed. And I like that you used her. So helping female students in particular, I think, is one audience. But you're right. The FAFSA, the filling out of application and learning about college, it's complicated for all of us because there's so many parts. And that's one of the reasons when we say, yes, we want first generation students. Yes, we want individuals who find themselves not showing up in the typical college classroom to show up in ours. It's because we recognize that we must wrap those services around them. And that's what we want to do. So if that means a student needs to get additional help just to fill out the application, that's where we show up and we're building partnerships with the high schools. We don't want to just take in the first cohort and rest on our laurels that everything went well, but we want to plan for the other cohorts. What we see right now, particularly when it comes to community college, is that it caters for students who already see themselves going to college, right? So they know the criteria and they're showing up. But for us, it may mean looking four cohorts ahead. So you're working with high schools to say, here's what we believe will help students show up at the Founders College. Can we recognize them for getting an A? Can we recognize them for doing good with service? Can we recognize them for working hard and know that those are the same things we want to value? If we do that early, students who normally would not even have a dream or a vision of going to college can start preparing. And they'll have that 4 years to plan and prepare before even graduating from high school.
So you would need to work really closely with colleges. And these are, we should specify, the people that the Butler anticipates having in the program live in the Indianapolis area.
Yes, it's a community college.
Right. Mm-hmm. This would be somebody in Golden, Colorado.
No.
Who said, oh, I'd like to go to Butler. So hey, this is specifically for people in the Indianapolis
this
area.
This is meeting a need. This is really about the heart of Butler's mission, is to ensure that we are serving Indianapolis, that we're serving Indiana, we're helping our state grow, and we're doing that through collective intelligence to ensure that our students who want an education have access and opportunity.
And so you need to really work closely with the high schools in order to make sure that message is getting to students early enough.
Correct.
That this is a possibility. Yeah. And I assume that there are a lot of high school kids who don't believe that college is a viable path.
Of course.
When indeed it may be, but they're not going to bother with it.
And I'm one of those, right? So very early on, my mom and dad, they don't come from wealth backgrounds. And so there's a limitation about what they want your education to be able to do to help the family. So for me, it was about, we don't want you to be poor like us, so you need to do something better. We didn't finish high school, so at minimum, you must finish high school. So as a child growing up in that environment, the goal was high school. Nothing beyond high school, because if your parents can't see it and dream it, they can't give you that pathway. And if you live in neighborhoods where other people don't have that pathway, there's not the exposure that you need to make the difference or to jump on the bandwagon.
I can't help but talk about myself with these podcasts, but I was thinking back to my high school experience. My family, both parents went to college. All my grandparents went to college. Starting from maybe the age of 14, I couldn't have a conversation with an adult without that person asking, where do you want to go to college? It is constant. And and your parents understand enough about the process that they're asking you, have you done this? Have you done this? Have you done this? So-and-so's son got into Yale.
Exactly.
How's your application going? Blah, 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 blah. So, I mean, they really are driving that. Sounds like you need to have an infrastructure outside of the family structure.
Yes.
That can drive that.
And that's exactly. So when we talk about underserved students and people talk about individuals coming from low wealth communities, I think using economic structures is a way to have the conversation. For me and the lens that I see the world, it's more about that bonding, that network that you have. That's where the difference shows up. So a child that does not come from that background don't have those conversations every day, don't know what they must be doing. So by the time they graduate from high school, they don't have the requirements that are needed, nor do they have the comparative background, nor colleagues to do the comparison enough to make sure that they're on the right track. Parents themselves, because of cost, may never even begin to train or educate themselves to say, okay, instead of just letting you sit here on the computer and do this, you should be going to this camp or studying this or working on this. That's not possible for them. So when we talk about serving the population that we're describing, we have to show up differently. We have to think differently. And that's the innovation that I'm leaning into at Butler.
Would the students at Founders College live on campus?
No, they will be commuters because they live in the area. Why would we displace them from the places they already live? The key is there are three key E's that make this a huge change from others is to ensure exposure, experience, experimentation around others who believe in that. But we're not saying that their neighborhoods are bad and horrible and they need to leave them.
But you would be able to provide some help with transportation cost.
Correct. Yeah. Okay. Particularly needs that they may see themselves experiencing, whether it's a flat tire or needing bus passes and that sort of stuff. We can't go out and buy everybody cars, which adds a whole nother cost and expense. But if they live in the neighborhood, they see Butler, they can walk, they could you sort of drive, maybe even bike over. We want to make sure that we could help them where needed.
What associate's degrees initially will be available through the Founders College?
That's a good question. I think one for you and I to find out. We're building them now. At this point, we're thinking definitely one in business management, another in sort of business and data analytics, a healthcare pathway that will allow a clinical and an operational track, and a new one that I'm so excited about, which is a youth and community advocacy that will bring in a lot of what we're understanding with human behavior, human development, just to be able to be ready to meet the audience that we're going to be working with. Think about generational theory and the whole idea of millennials and Gen X and Gen Zers. The populations are changing and so are their needs. So we need workers who understand that population. So when they show up in offices and workplaces, unlike the boomers who may not want to work with the Zers and the Jenners, right, you have individuals that can bridge that divide.
It's fascinating how much of the information I receive from the marketing industry where they are completely baffled by Gen Z. I mean, it is a huge preoccupation right now. I mean, in that industry, then I assume in others as well. Yeah. How large of a class would you anticipate having in the first year?
In the first year, we're anticipating 100, maybe maximum 125, but at least 100 at the start. And the following year, increasing at least by another 50 or so. At maturity, probably around 320, 325.
What do you hope will be the effect for these students of being a part of a university community? Because I think we all have the experience of getting to college and having our worlds turned at least about 95 degrees. So what is it that you hope that experience will do for them?
A lot of the outcomes we won't know until they graduate, because we're looking at social mobility. We're looking at whether or not they can change a trajectory for their entire families, whether they could change a trajectory for themselves. So that student that has never been exposed to college will eventually be able to change their entire family almost immediately by getting access. But we're also looking at belongingness, the idea of just knowing that your voice and your innovation and your thoughts are as valuable as anybody else. And for the state, by golly, of course we want to contribute to what the state is doing and ensuring that we have a larger college going rate. We want good completion, good persistence, good graduation rate. But I think at the ending of the day, it's about that person making sure that they're developing as well and not so much the school metrics. And if we do that well and students feel and see themselves in the process and they belong, we'll have a better climate. We'll have a better state. We'll have people who put service first and where they see themselves making a difference. And I think that's key to our success.
One of the things I'm having a hard time wrapping my brain around is the financial burden, if any, for the student. It sort of sounds like this essentially will be free for students. Am I interpreting that correctly?
You are interpreting that correctly, but it's free to the out-of-pocket expense for the student. So I want to make sure that I'm clear. Indiana leads almost, I think, in the top 10 for student aid. So using hypothetically, right? So putting some numbers out there, if a student has completed their FAFSA, it shows their expected family contribution. Whatever is left in that family contribution, we're hoping that they could use their Pell Grants to start that off. Right now, that's about, I think, $7,395 approximately for a student, just general. And those students also qualify for Frank O'Bannon scholarships or grants, which can give them an additional boost in funds. The state has also provided performance opportunities or performance dollars. So if the students do well, let's say they finish their associate's degree, they get an extra $900. If they're on track and take 30 credits through that process, they get some additional funds. When you put all of that together, it should be able to cover their expenses for the first 2 years using state aid. Once they move on from the associate's degree and decide that they want to do a four-year degree with Butler, Butler is willing to ensure that their tuition for the next 2 years comes to no more than $10,000.
So you're looking
for both years, so $5,000 a year. So the student would be able to graduate with no more than $10,000 out of pocket.
So bottom line, for the first 2 years, essentially no cost.
Correct.
If we assuming the various kinds of state aid that are available and different kinds of aid. And then if you wish to continue and get your bachelor's degree for two more years, no more than $10,000.
That amazing. Was the president's vision, Jim Danko, and to the moon and back, right? So he had a moonshot idea, as the story goes, but also has a phenomenal team here that have taken that vision and said, let's make this possible. So I think there is a definitely shout out to the Stephanie Hawkins and her team, but also to Brooke and others. There's 8 work streams that have been working on this over the last 2 years. There's at least, maybe about 100 different people engaged in the work. So when we talk about a change that an institution is making, this is not one person's idea. And you'll see, even when I come on board, it's not a one-person leadership. It's about moving an entire ship together. And the Butler community, the Butler leadership, the Butler board, alumni, donors, everybody's on board, which seems to be the right type of energy to, one, make bold change, but two, to show you that it's time. It's time that we show up for these types of students, but at the same time that we show up in who we are, giving service and making sure that we're serving our state.
So my associate's degree would be from the Founders College of Butler University.
Yes.
But it's a Butler University degree.
Correct. It's a Butler University degree. Same high quality faculty, education, experience, internship, network, alumni network. Yeah. It's just the beauty. I just get so much joy with it. Students don't get that access. Many times you have college communities and they pop up all over and they come into that community and the students who are from that community are priced out. This is changing that.
Are the classes all going to be in-person classes?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm coming to the campus for all my classes.
You're coming to campus. Remember, it's the three E's, right, Mason? It's about experience, exposure, and experimentation. And though you may enjoy the occasional one or two class from your desktop, you need to grapple with individuals. At the ending of the day, they haven't created an island where we just get to live on our own and still be successful. So you want the students to come and build those experiences. Also, feeling happens from interaction with real people. That's how you build good relationships. That's how you remember, and you can think back 10, 15, 20 years ago about that experience that you had. And most of that is about that oxytocin. It's about that happy feeling thought that you got.
Let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsor. This is the IBJ Podcast.
Taft, today's modern law firm, with more than 800 attorneys in 8 primary Midwest markets and the District of Columbia, we provide solutions to the business issues facing middle market and emerging companies alike. We do this through a highly collaborative and inclusive team approach. Taft, the modern law firm. To learn more, visit taftlaw.com.
Okay, we're back with my conversation with Carolyn Gentle-Genity, the inaugural dean of the new Founders College at Butler University. I don't want to scare you.
Uh-oh, with that premise.
No. So we're looking at probably about 15 months
before
the first students are on campus. Can you give us an overview of like the big things that you need to do?
The biggest one, I believe, is finalizing the degrees and all the details that go with that. And kudos to my team, particularly Rose Campbell and others that have been working through this. We have a good structure, but we want to get that ready. Once we get that ready, it's important to align those with some good KPIs, some good outcomes that we want to track, and making sure that we're providing the support that students need. And others have heard me say this. A lot of times we just say, oh, we have these programs, so they're going to have these programs. But we rarely assess them. We rarely do an audit on them to see, well, off those 100 programs, which one helped the student the most with belonging, with lifting their GPA, with helping them to persist. So we want to do some of that assessment. We'll be doing that pretty soon. And from there, outside of the academics, it's the infrastructure. We need a location for these students to come, make sure we have classrooms and the right furniture and the right equipment to get them ready and going. And once those are in place too, so think of these as parallel roads or parallel lanes, we also have to hire staff and faculty and get that going. So it's a unit that we envision by the time we are finished may have at least maybe a good 30 or so people engaged in the work, teaching social workers and teachers or lecturers in the space. But there are many moving parts. So I think broadly the application, thereafter sort of the curriculum, moving from the curriculum with infrastructure. And I would say fourth then, sort of looking at that belonging and what we want them to feel and experience. I had a great conversation with just the landscaping crew and the police officers on campus, just about how do we make it welcoming. So there are a lot of moving parts.
So you come to this position from the current roles, at least for the next month or so, as Indiana University's Assistant Vice President for University Academic Policy, as well as a tenured professor in the School of Social Work. But as you mentioned, you also come to it with lived experience, very similar to those who will be in the college. So you grew up in Belize.
Yes.
I think you mentioned, which for folks who aren't familiar with it, northeastern coast of Central America, bordered by Mexico on the north, Caribbean Sea to the east. Tell me about your family and growing up in Belize.
I love growing up in Belize. My mom used to say the world is your sandbox, right? So I just get to play. I was never limited. So I never really realized that I'm not rich, right? So it's one of those things you really grow up just knowing, gosh, finding what you want to be, what you want to do. I'm the eldest of 5. So that puts it in perspective very quickly. And as the eldest, I had to work really hard to, if I wanted to do something, I had to find things to entertain my other brothers and sisters. So I got involved in youth work very early. By the time I was at least 10, 11, I was in several different youth groups. I led my first youth group at 12. Their parents allowed us to go on a youth jamboree with the Catholic Church. Most of the schooling in Belize is within the Catholic faith. And so we had a huge jamboree. We went, there's six different districts, so the top tip of the district. And we went for maybe about 2 or 3 days with a youth jamboree. So leadership was one of those things that I sort of jumped into very quickly. But I also realized that being a leader and running in front and thinking everybody's going to follow you does not come just by telling them to do so, particularly young kids and teenagers. So I worked really hard then to find activities to engage. So I did variety shows, I did poetry, I did basketball, I did many different things just to engage and brought others along. And that was sort of the epitome of my childhood, being engaged in just fun stuff, running, playing, climbing trees, eating mangoes. I love mangoes. That's my favorite fruit, right? So doing that sort of stuff. And as I moved on to high school, that was one of the things I think you and I talked about offline. It's for me, high school was the next step, and I knew that that was what my parents wanted. But I also recognized that I wanted to go to a good school that allowed me exposure beyond those where I lived. And I told my mom I wanted to go to this all-girls Catholic high school, private high school. And she goes, I don't think we can afford that. So I worked through a process where I worked really hard. Belize has a required examination to go to high school. So you have to get a high grade to go to high school. So I got a 96.9 out of 100. So I thought, this is good. So I applied to this high school, though my mom did not want me to apply. And being defiant, it was the only high school that I applied to. So I'm like, if this doesn't work, I'm not quite sure what's going to happen next.
But, I don't know, Mom. It's the only school I applied to.
But I got accepted, and I got to interact then with the top of Belize and those who were leaders in the country and their kids. So exposure was huge. I then was on the debate club. I did the basketball.
Okay, now hold on a second. Now, how did you? So wait, your parents said they couldn't afford it.
Yeah.
How did you afford it?
I'm good at advocating. So after I got in, we, with some of my other, I think you'll call them mentors, people that helped me with the youth group, said, you know, if you really want this to happen, there are ways that you could do that. So I found out we could talk to the principal. I set up a meeting to go to the school and talk to the principal. And this is, there's no car, right? So we walk to the high school to be able to talk about the process and how to get in. My mom went with me and we negotiated along with my dad. And they said, based on your circumstances, but because of your grade, we know you'll do well. But they agreed for me to pay for my high school expenses weekly. My dad was a food vendor. And so he would go out and sell the food and we would get monies. And every week when I would go to school, we would take the money to pay for school fees.
Wow. And you had four siblings, right? Were your parents like, this is a dangerous precedent?
Of course. They thought I was crazy, which is why I had to work 2-3 times. And so I've grown up then always juggling many things to make sure that the thing that I want to support can be successful. So I worked hard with them. I volunteered on the side. I would write poetry and would win a couple literary competitions, which I would earn maybe a $500 or $100 here, give some home, and use the rest to sort of pay school fees and work part-time sometimes.
So very successful.
But that's my journey in Belize, yeah.
Yeah. And then you applied to a 2-year college? Is
yes,
that correct?
In Belize as well. Okay. Again, because I was on that trajectory, most of the high schoolers from St. Catherine's Academy is the high school. There were only 2 all-girls high school in Belize at that time. And one was by the Palatine Sisters and the other was by the Sisters of Charity of Nazareth, which is the one that I attended. And most of those girls were also going on to 2-year colleges. Junior high at that time, again, and this is the most prestigious junior high 2-year college in Belize. Most of the kids were going there. So when we were nearing the end, because I had so much going on, I had anxiety around test taking. And it was important then to do well, but I just realized that I wasn't going to do quite well. So I still took the test And I got a very low score on my SAT. I told the principal at that time, and she said, what do you want to do about it? And I said, I still want to go to a junior high. I want to go to this junior college. And she said, well, if you think it's going to work, all you have to do is share your report cards. You've done well. And she set up a meeting for me with, at that time, not the principal. I think, what did she call? The rector? I don't remember the name that was given to her. But had the meeting with her, and she said, well, your grades are good. Your service is good. And I got accepted pretty much before everybody else because I moved on it very early. With the same process, though, I got a work study. I had to do some stuff on the side.
And how did you come then to the attention of the president of Spalding University, which is in Kentucky?
Yes, it's in Louisville, Kentucky. Because I knew I had to still do work study while in junior college, and I wanted to do a whole bunch of stuff. So I became student government president. I started youth programs. I did Fun Fridays. I was just very engaged.
You were the value add student of the century.
Yes. So when Spalding came, we had another person, apparently it was a friend of a colleague at the college, and he began working at Spalding University. And so he built this relationship with the president and told him he should come down and go to the school and see the top quality candidates they have. By that time, again, I told you, my goal was to finish high school, nothing beyond that. So when I got to the junior college, that was already golden for me. I was ready to be finished. So the dean of students then, because he's seen me, I'm around doing all this stuff. He said, you should apply for this. I'm like, look, my ultimate goal was only to get a B+ in everything. That's all I strived for. So if you're looking for an A student, you have the wrong student. He just kept saying, no, we're not looking for A student. We want good student. I'm like, well, then I don't have any money to go there. So I'm done. I don't want any more education. I'm tired of this. Stop bothering me. But he was persistent to the point that the Friday when the application was going to close, he said, still bothering me, doing my work study. I was cleaning the general commons area. And he goes, I'll help you, sweet, while you go in this room and finish this application.
Yeah,
I'm like, of course, I can trade work. You could do. And so that was how I applied. And I got accepted, full scholarship, full ride to go to Spalding University to do my bachelor's degree. And I carried the same spirit and energy. I was on the newspaper club. I won Rat Queen. This makes a lot of people smile. But in Kentucky, it's the Derby and they raise horses. So in the college, we were allowed the science lab to race rats.
Rats.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you would generate money. People would vote with coins. You would bring your pennies and your penny jars and you'll just vote for who you want to win. But I just had fun. I did the PR club, every club you could think about. I did Model United Nations. And so when I was finished with my bachelor's in social work, I was getting ready to go home. The social work program was getting ready to start their master's program. And they were looking for candidates. They encouraged me to apply. And I said, I'm done. I'm ready to go home. And the working with the president of the university at that time, Thomas Oates, I said, you know, they're inviting me. It will be good if I go home with a master's degree. It's very likely that that may be my last degree, but I don't have the money for it. I don't want to take out a student loan. And because of my experience and engagement, I even got who's who for colleges, university. I mean, all that good stuff. He said, I think your track record is good. We can do a promissory note. So I signed a promissory note for my master's degree and that I would then go home when it was finished and I would pay back.
How is that different from like a regular like college loan?
I come to you, Mason, and you say, Carolyn, let's sign a note. We drafted up a piece of paper. I signed it. I paid nothing while there and no interest, nothing. When I went home, I got my check and I was...
It's like an IOU.
It is an IOU.
So, wow. So I just got to pay you back.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's it. So I went home and I got a job. Like I told you, teaching at University of the West Indies for that immediate summer to get something going. I stayed with my mom. I didn't even have an apartment or anything, and I started paying back. I took the GRE. That was one thing I did before leaving. I took the GRE, and I knew that the GRE was good for 5 years. So I said, oh, if I decide to, I have 5 years. I got a job at the YMCA, running the YMCA, that also had an alternative boys' school and other stuff wrapped up into it. The reason I say that is because I was paid $3,013 after Social Security and everything was out. And I had agreed, this is Belize dollars, 2-to-1. And I had agreed to pay $1,500 per month. So out of my $3,013, I was left with $13 per month to live on.
Well, you live with your mom.
Yes.
That's helpful.
Yes.
I've lived with my mom too, so I know what you mean.
Yep. Lived on cereal and cornflakes and that sort of stuff for a while, but yeah.
When you initially left for Louisville, were your folks like, that's amazing, great, see you later?
No.
Or did they want you to stay?
By that time, my dad had passed. No, he was sick. And so my mom was making the decision. Remember I told you I did a whole bunch of youth work on the side. So I did some with our government of Belize. I was a youth ambassador to the Caribbean. So I did some of that work that I brought in some extra income and exposure. So before coming to Spalding, I had a trip to Jamaica to speak in one of their youth forums. And my mom was worried. She was excited because she knew the 1 week trip for Jamaica, great. But she was paranoid for what will happen thereafter. This is her first child going for a long time, knowing nobody in the U.S., no place, worried about healthcare, just a bunch of stuff. She had a lot of concerns. But it was more of me telling her that I'm the eldest of five. You've trusted me to lead for a long time, and I've never failed you. And whenever I need something, I always know how to find somebody. I always have that agency to ask somebody for help. Trust that. And she did. But she was also worried that the school was covering all the typical expenses, but not the other expenses. So she had barbecue sales to raise money. We asked a colleague to help us get land that we would put up for collateral. And we took out a small loan, about 10,000 Belize dollars. For her, that's like $1 million loan. And that was 5,000 US, and that helped with clothing because we were coming to a coal state, for food, furnishing the dorm, doing the other aspects that came with it.
So you have a really high degree of empathy for, I don't know if we're calling them kids is right, for young people who would be coming into
for
this situation,
scholars.
Even though, I mean, they're not leaving their own home country, they're not leaving Indianapolis, but it is a cultural shift.
It is, but it's a cultural shift that's paved with warmth and empathy so that that parent, just like any other parent sending their child off to college, they want to know that from the moment the child gets to campus, that all those life situations that they would normally have at home that the parent would respond to, that there's somebody here to respond to them. So for me, it's important that the people we hire in the Founders College believe that, yes, you may have the title of X, but your job is to provide a big hug and support for these students in all walks of what they bring. Sometimes it may just be, you know, I woke up with a headache and I don't know what to do. And normally my mom would be the one to, right? It's these little things that sometimes you don't think about.
One of your areas of expertise is student absenteeism, which I understand has become a much more prevalent problem.
It's huge.
Since the pandemic, for sure, for a variety of reasons.
I think the pandemic legitimized the open conversation of it.
How strict is Founders College going to be about attendance and absenteeism?
If we understand absenteeism well, let me backtrack just a little. There's attendance and there's absenteeism. Attendance is about present and absence. All colleges, all schools collect present and absent. Are you here? Are you not here? And we have a threshold of grace that says after 5 absences, after 6 absences. For that, we haven't quite figured out the details yet, but there'll be those generic policies that should be there. Absenteeism, though, says, why are you absent? What happened? What's getting in the way? And how can we fix that? So it's a broader context. If I may deviate just a little, in absenteeism, we're looking at school avoidance. That's a child skipping school because there's a lot of stuff happening in the school climate, bullying or not feeling welcome or not looking pretty enough or a menstrual cycle, all these things that show up in the school climate. So that's school factors versus school refusal that are psychological type stuff. I'm afraid, there's anxiety, there's autism, there's all these other aspects that are going on. And school withdrawal, where a parent says, you need to stay home because X, Y, and Z is happening.
Yeah, that's what, more kind of what I was thinking of, is conflicts with your family life. I mean, some needs that your family have, yes, that needed to be taken, mm-hmm, care of. Yeah.
And I agree with you. So those are the pieces that we're working. In fact, during my interview, that was one of the questions I asked, particularly the Come to Believe colleagues, about what's the failing option? What's the stepping aside option? What is, I need to put this on hold option? Where are those? And they've talked very openly about building those into the policies. And that's exactly what we're going to do. We're going to ensure that students can step away for a while if needs be. They're on ramps and off ramps to support them. We also want to recognize that learning is nebulous, right? There are things that they could do now, and there are things that they could do later. Pell Grants, Francophone, and all of these stuff allow them to do courses in the summer. So they're going to have classes all year round to fit their schedule and to allow some flexibility.
Wow. Now I'm already figuring out when we need to meet again to see how this works out. Maybe, yes, like 18 months?
You should.
Yeah, this is going to be fascinating.
And those are the things that when I mentioned to you about the application and launch, yes, we could quickly stand up an application and launch, but then you'll have all these questions. So you have to be 10 steps ahead. What if this? What if this? And if this, then what? And getting that ready. And that takes some time. It also takes working with the high school so that they could inform us about the students that will come and what they often experience. You also mentioned language. For me, it's also important that on the website that we have a section that you can just click and it changes everything on that website to a different language. Using AI appropriately, it's key to the future.
Ooh, yeah, that's a ball of wax.
Yeah. It is. It is. But the goal is to show up for the student. It's to make sure they have experiences that last them a lifetime. It's to ensure that they have the exposure that they've never had, that they could see what they could be. It's about experimenting in a way that they could see their ideas and innovation show up in the spaces where they need for it to show up. Imagine you have a street with potholes. The person that repairs potholes or orders potholes to be filled may never drive on that street. It takes that person from that street to alert somebody else that there's something here that needs to be fixed. And for that person then to say, here's some ideas that I have about how to fix it, right? And I think that's what Founders College is doing, is to say, we have students right here in our neighborhood that we haven't been able to serve as well as we want to. And we want to serve them. That's the key word there. And I'll derail for a little. But when we say underserved students, it's not that we don't know how to serve them well or that we have served them and we've messed up. It means there's been no service, underserved. And therefore, we have to be creative about how we serve them by making sure that they can inform the work. So yes, we're putting a lot up structurally, but we're building guardrails that will be informed by these students. So they too will help us realize how to do this right, how to do it well. And if we do it well, they will be the evangelic individuals that will go out there and tell other people about this model. And if it works, maybe other people and throughout the U.S., even internationally, can then adopt it as something that works.
Well, we'll definitely have to check in on this. Thank you so much for laying this out for me. This is going to be an incredible, incredible experience for you.
It's a good roadmap with some pebble stones along the way. So we'll work it through. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you.
I hope others found it helpful.
My thanks again to Carolyn Gentle Genity. And folks, before you get on with the rest of your week, there are some stories in the latest issue of IBJ I want to draw to your attention. First up, the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Museum is in the midst of a $64 million overhaul that will help it catch up to the latest standards in education and visitor experience. Mickey Shuey has the inside story on the museum's first renovation since it opened in 1976. Also in this week's issue,
John Russell gets the lay of the land in Indiana's booming nuclear medicine sector. And Dave Lindquist details development of the $170 million Fishers Event Center, which will become the home to the Indy Fuel, Fishers Freight, and Indy Ignite. Again, you can find these stories in the latest print edition of IBJ or, of course, online at IBJ.com. And thanks again for making time this week for the IBJ podcast. I'm Mason King. Hang in there, everybody. We'll be back again next week.